I had a classmate who at one point was saying that they don't like to read fantasy or science fiction. And they're like, because that stuff can't happen. So it's not that interesting to me. And I was like, yeah, that rules.
If only we could take our love of reading to a new level.
Well, I've always wanted to start a book club.
Book club!
For masochists and other deviants.
Hello and welcome to the Book Club for Masochists, where we read and discuss all the genres and types of literature, regardless of our actual interest in them.
Every month, we read books from a new, randomly picked genre. Then on the podcast, we discuss our reading choices, experiences, opinions, appeal factors, and other related topics as friends and library workers.
In this episode number 176, we get to talk about the genre of fantasy.
My name is Jam. I'm a librarian in Vancouver, British Columbia, which is located on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded land of the Musqueam, Squamish, Tsleil-Waututh, and Stolo people.
My name is Matthew. I'm a librarian in Fort Collins, Colorado, USA.
My name is Anna, and I'm also in Fort Collins, which is on the traditional and ancestral homelands of the Arapaho, Cheyenne, and Ute nations and peoples.
My name is Megan. I'm an archivist. I live and work on the unceded traditional territory of the Algonquin Anishinaabe, which is also known as the National Capital Region of Canada.
I'm surprised you haven't made an announcement sound yet that you insert.
Maybe I do, and you just don't listen to the podcast.
It's true. I don't listen, so he could have.
I do sometimes edit to add extra things into
I know. You do sometimes.
You do.
I think it's very funny when I do that.
They are excellent, usually. Like all the dun-duns.
There's going to be one right there.
So, as with every episode of the podcast for the last several years, we have, and by we, I mean Jam, mostly, maybe entirely, we have put together a list of books in the genre we're talking about by BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, and People of Color authors. And so you can find that in the show notes or on our website at bookclub4m.com. Lots of good and interesting stuff there. And we did this because we want more people to find those books and know that they exist.
And read them.
Yes, this fantasy list of fantasy books by BIPOC authors. It's a long one. I think there's going to be like, I'm still in the midst of making it while we're recording, but there's going to be at least like about 30 books on there, I think, including some classics, some newer stuff, a couple of novellas, because there's a lot of fantasy novellas out there that need more love and attention. Check it out.
And one of the things about the larger genres like fantasy is that we're going to end up doing subgenres anyway.
Mm-hmm. We will do other fantasy lists.
So this genre is very broad and something at least several of us read anyway without the podcast. So really, this is kind of a break month for us in some ways. We had a lot of choice and we might have been reading it anyway. So different from the months where we read genres that we are unfamiliar with or dislike. Though I guess, you know, we could have still read books we disliked this month. I started reading a book I disliked this month and gave up. So it does still happen. But I guess the first thing is, like, you know, fantasy is a very broad genre with many different subgenres, as was just said. What do we think of fantasy as a genre? What is included? What is not included?
Well, first I wanted to mention on the note of like, we read things we liked this month. That's true. I think there's a different sort of masochism to this kind of month where the genres I don't like, you know, it hurts to read sometimes. Genres that I love, like fantasy, I have a big stack of books and I did not get through like even a small percentage of them. And it's still like, yeah, still some emotions involved. Some emotional pain.
It can sometimes be harder to discuss books that we like as well. So that can be a challenge. It's like, oh, why did you like this book so much? Oh, it was great. I loved it. A+. No notes.
So what is fantasy? Is that the question?
Sure. Yes.
Well, so
There's two ways to think about it, I guess. One of which is, like, fantasy is everything that's not realism. Right? Which makes it so broad as to be functionally useless as a seeker or a provider of books, because, like, that is so many things. So many things. It's impossible. You need to be able to cut it down to something a little bit more manageable. Another way of thinking about it is, it's like the tropey aspects of fantasy that we all know and may or may not love, like dragons or wizards and vaguely medieval era settings and
maps,
like all that kind of stuff that if you've played a D&D game, you know. You know it like you didn't even have to read the token. Because it's there already. But that also, it does the genre an injustice, because then people will think, well, I don't like Tolkien. I don't know how that's possible. But some people would say, I don't like Tolkien because he takes too long to talk about stuff.
My hand is in the air.
I was also making a face.
And so then the problem becomes, like, people think of the stereotypes of the fantasy and forget that actually there's lots of nuance, there's lots of different settings, there's lots of different ways of approaching, you know, the fantastical elements, the elements that are not realistic in terms of the elements, the way the world works, whether there's magic or whatever. Even if the way the characters are reacting are probably still realistic. And, like, physics. I don't know if that's helpful, though.
Involving forces that ignore our understanding and reality of physics is generally a major component of fantasy. Beyond that, so many different things.
So you're saying it needs magic.
Yeah, it needs something that sort of, it doesn't have to be physics, it could be other aspects of it, but yeah.
So my Goodreads shelf for fantasy is not called fantasy, it's just called magic, which is not that useful to other readers. I started that when I joined Goodreads, you know, like over a decade ago, and I wasn't as concerned with how useful my shelves were to other people. But it's just magic, because I feel like that is a defining characteristic for me, and also like captures some overlap between other sort of edge cases that might not be, you know, share all of the tropes of like a more traditional fantasy story, but still is in my interest area. However, I was struggling this month with the question of like, does it need magic to be fantasy? And also how... like how nitty gritty into the rules of how magic works do you have to get before it starts to become science fiction?
The one that I always think is very funny is the idea of mutants in the Marvel comics and movies, where it's like, oh, that's clearly science fiction. It's just magic.
Even when they're magicians.
Also, some people's mutation is they just have magical powers.
Yeah, some of it's like, oh, you're is literally magic. But it's just like, you know, you read books, but it's like, oh, yes, you know, your bloodline causes you to be a werewolf or to have magic powers. That's literally like, it's the same thing as in X-Men, you know? It's like, oh, yes, your blood, your genes have caused you to have superpowers.
But there's always been overlaps like that. I mean, like, if you even go to just like something as like revealing the roots of being a fantasy reader in my life, which is like Anne McCaffrey and the Dragon Riders of Pern and all of that. Like, yes, like they present themselves as just straight up fantasy. But if you know the lore, you know that it's actually science fiction that's presented as fantasy.
You know, another one might be ElfQuest, the ElfQuest comic series.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. True.
I was thinking of Steven Universe, where for a while it seems very like fantasy. There's these colorful people and they have magic powers. And it's like also they're aliens and they're from space and they have a different physiology and they're composed of, you know, spectrums of light. And it's like, oh, this is for sure science fiction now.
But even that, like you could even name like, you know, Sailor Moon, another like magical girl series. It's like they're from the moon, other planets, something.
I mean, but they like, yeah. The kingdom on the moon, it's a little more like...
Verges into the mythology aspect, too.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
For me, magic has to be part of it. I've read a couple of quote-unquote fantasy books, or I say read, I started a couple of quote-unquote fantasy books over the last couple of years that have been described as fantasy. And then when I read them, I discovered that the only fantastical elements of them were either like the geography, so that it was not set on Earth, but everything else was just human stuff, or the names that they called people. And so it's like, oh yeah, you're a goblin and you're an elf, but like there's literally, maybe they have pointy ears, but other than that, it could have been about like any two places. You know, it's like, oh, you're American and you're Canadian, or you're French and you're German, or whatever it happens to be. Like that was the difference between the characters and humans. They were all just humans that maybe had pointy ears. And I'm like, neither of these count as fantasy novels to me, because like they're not fantastical with a K enough.
Yeah, I read a graphic novel recently called Squire by Sarah Althagay and Nadia Shamas that is a fan, like lots of people have shelved it as fantasy on Goodreads, and I don't know what else to call it is the problem. Like it has no magic. There's nothing like fantastical necessarily. It is set in a like completely made up world, like, you know, fake geography and fake human cultures that are all very like Arab, Middle Eastern inspired. But originally, like in the author's notes at the end of the book, was going to feature like cultures of elves and orcs and like these very clearly like fantasy trope kinds of beings, and then decided to make it more like based around human cultures. And so I don't like, it's, if it was the same story, but there were elves and orcs, would be like, yeah, this is fantasy. But because it is all humans, it feels more like, I guess it doesn't feel like fantasy, but I don't know what else to call it.
It like, it depends on how much culture is created to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, if you're making up culture and you're like, oh, like, no, there are actual like physiological differences between these
the species, are you thinking?
I don't know what the term to use is, so I'm thinking about it. Between these entities, like between the elves and the orcs and the trolls and whatever it happens to be, there has to be something. They can't just be humans with a different culture.
Magic and/or world building.
But at the same time, like, what does that even mean? He said, you know, questioning his own thing before anyone else can.
I think it's fair to say that you're drawn more towards the ones with the magic. And if there's not magic, there just isn't as much appeal to the book and the world. Like, there isn't enough.
Yeah, yeah. If I want to read a book set in Weimar-era Germany, I'll read a book set in Weimar-era Germany, not one that has the serial numbers filed off, unless there's, like, you know, magic trains or something.
This is the version of In Space. I think for myself, I don't mind a magic light or magic-less other world without, well, I would like a little bit of, you know, weird creatures and different species or entities or whatever, but I think I have more tolerance for a magic light world.
This is where I kind of like the term speculative fiction has sort of picked up a little bit, because I feel like it covers a little bit of this like in between ground where things are not necessarily fully into embracing magic or fully into embracing like different, you know, beings, but still happens in a way that does not match our reality.
And then you have like magical realism as another aspect of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or like the supernatural or paranormal.
Yeah, I did have a moment making the book list where I was like, is it to vampires? Can I do vampires on here? Is that its own thing?
That's fantasy, I'd say.
Unless it's horror.
I think there's a lot of horror that is fantasy.
True.
I did read some of that.
You read a vampire?
I didn't read a vampire. I just read a lot of horror.
I read a vampire. I just really, I kind of want to button now. I read a vampire. Like, it's great. I forget even what I was going to say there. I got distracted by I Read a Vampire.
Was it about the supernatural or the vampire, the urban?
Yeah, that's, I was thinking about the urban fantasy piece and like that's a challenging component for me because it's literally in the title, urban fantasy. It's a form of fantasy, right? But like when we picked the genre for the month, I was like, am I allowed to read urban fantasy or is that too specific within the genre of fantasy? You know, I just read whatever I felt like it. But like I did have that thought process.
And with that one, I feel especially there's so much like overlap with paranormal romance.
Yeah, I struggle when the genre we pick is really broad like this, where I'm like, I want to read something that's like I got to read something with a map at the front that has like a wizard and regions. And that's not what I read. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, no, it's not what I read either, but I had the same thought process.
Yeah, it's like, I got to read something. That's not what I typically go for in fantasy. There are some examples of that I've really enjoyed. Do we want to move into background?
Yeah.
Just slide into background.
Let's do it, because we're gonna be a while.
Graceling is the first one that pops into mind as a good YA example of that map at the front kind of very classic fantasy tale. Yeah, I think formative work for me was The Golden Compass and the Northern Lights, depending on what country you're in. The Philip Pullman Dark Materials series was, I think, for me, what like Lord of the Rings was for a lot of other people. I never got through Lord of the Rings. Apologies to Tolkien fans, but yeah, Golden Compass was sort of my bridge into fantasy.
Yeah, at the beginning of the month, I thought I would finally get back to the Lord of the Rings and read the whole thing, but I did not. For me, the keystone piece would then be The Hobbit, and Brian Jacques' Redwall, which is a fantasy series built around small animals, like the mice and the rabbits are the heroes and the rats are the bad characters kind of thing.
I'm going to one-up you on maps at the front of the book, Jam.
Okay.
And show you this, which is a fantasy map.
What? What? It's a fold-out map for listeners. It is a very large fold-out map. What book is this?
Is this attached to a book?
It comes with a guide to the world. This is the Discworld map.
Sure.
And then I also have three other maps from that world. I have the Ankh-Morpork map and the map of Death's world and the map of Lankra, which is also set in the Discworld map. These are some of the only physical books I own anymore. I kept the maps. I think they're autographed.
So if we're talking about like formative, this would be
Discworld for me, 100%. That's the fantasy I read. Yeah, like I got these autographed by by Terry Pratchett and some other people and stuff. So
dang.
And kind of, I feel in some ways ruined other fantasy for me for a long time. Because I'm like, but these ones are funny and good and saying something about the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I never read the, I never finished the C.S. Lewis, what am I, the Chronicles of Narnia. I read like half of Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. But one of his that was, I think, formative for me was the Screwtape Letters, which I don't know if anyone else has read, but is from like, yeah, the point of view of a demon writing to their protege that I think in a little, yeah, it like spoiled me a little bit on like format and like my was I shouldn't say it that way. It was a really good match for format wise for me. It's like an epistolary fantasy novel.
So my formative ones would have been Tamora Pierce, particularly Elena the First Adventure. I don't tend to mention those as much anymore because there are some thought process to be had around the author and things that they have discussed since then. So I tend not to – these are not ones I now offer as a recommendation in any way, but they were formative for me. And then the other ones would be like Wild Child and Juniper, which are by Monica Furlong. Couldn't remember if there's an H on the end or not. And those are more like witchcraft books set in like, I think in Breton. I can't remember for sure if that's where they're set, but like way back in the eras somewhere. So those would have been some of the formative ones for me. And I still have my copies of those, both of those, my originals from when I was a child. And they look like crap because, boy, they have been thumbed through a lot. but that definitely, like, sent me right down a rabbit hole. Like, I couldn't even tell you what was, like, formative after then. There were so many things. And over the years, I've slowly let most of that collection go. But I did drag them around for a long time. I had a giant collection of fantasy paperbacks that I dragged around for a long time.
Yeah, we were both talking earlier this week about how when we were like, you know, teenagers, young teenagers, we would just like read and reread and reread these books over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And so it's like, I got a new book in the series. And instead of just reading that new book, maybe start over with the first book in the series. And so you had to read all the ones up to that before you got to the new thing. And I'm just like, how long did it take? Like, I must have read a book every like 4 days or something to do that. Like, but the other one I'll mention that I think is not really always thought of as a fantasy, is the Sandman comics.
Mm-hmm.
Written by Neil Gaiman with art by a whole bunch of different people, which are very fantasy and become like increasingly fantasy-y as the series goes on and less superhero-y. And I think those are a really big and important fantasy series for me as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your comment about reading things over reminded me of the first book I ever read twice, which, I mean, to memory, the first like proper like novel that I ever read twice, which was Ella Enchanted by Gail Carson Levine. I read that a bunch of times. A retelling of Cinderella. The book is much better than the movie.
Yeah. I've read that book, but I didn't read it till I was an adult, and it was great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am a person who's super burnt out on fairy tale retellings as an adult, but that one is high caliber.
The first book I ever read twice is a really good title for something.
Well, we just burned it for an episode title. Everybody knows what the first book I ever read twice is now.
I have no idea what that would be for me. Yeah. But it's just like it sounds like the name of a book, like a memoir or something, a memoir of books. The other fantasy thing that I think is worth mentioning to get into the current zeitgeist is video games, and specifically Zelda, Legend of Zelda.
Yeah, I was going to say, I did not read as many books as I wanted to this month, in part because I was reading a little book called Tears of the Kingdom.
It involves reading.
Sure, yeah.
I guess you could skip all of the reading and not pay attention to it and somehow stumble your way around.
It would be hard, I think, to figure out what to do.
Anna and I were playing Breath of the Wild because we are at least 6 years out of date.
At all times, yes.
That's fair. I was really, I mean, it's too late for now, but Ian and I have been really curious what folks' experience would be like if they played Tears of the Kingdom first and then went back and played Breath of the Wild. But
well, we've only played the first plateau, so I guess we could do that. But I think we have enough video games. We're not going to go out and buy another one right now.
That's fair. Yeah. You've got like 200 hours or something ahead of you to play in Breath of the Wild.
Oh, and it's not like I'm playing other video games.
Yeah, he's super lost in Yakuza Zero?
Yeah, Yakuza Zero. Yeah,
so lost in that right now.
Look, I need to get better at racing the slot cars, Anna.
Yeah,
The Pocket Every Racer. Time I need to get better at racing at Pocket Racer.
What's next on our podcast? What do we... our search strategy?
Search strategies.
I mean, I had a lot in my home. I didn't end up reading any of those, but I also just had a lot like on my to be read list. I just like kind of looked around.
Yeah.
One thing I was able to do for this genre that we can't do for the narrower genres as often is I went to the public library and just looked at their new book section. And I'm like, oh, here's the fantasy section of the new books. Is there anything that catches my eye? And I borrowed a couple of things from that.
I did that, and they were all like book twos. And then you couldn't get book one because all of them were checked out. So I was like, this was not effective.
Yeah, I did actually read something off my shelves. And yeah, I also have plenty of options, both on my shelves and on my TBR. Funny enough, what I did read off my shelves was, yes, it was on my shelves, but it actually hadn't been for very long because when I first moved to Fort Collins, one of the early things I do is find the local indie bookstore. And of course, I'm obliged to purchase something from my local indie. Got to find something. So I picked up book one and two of a series that I had read book one ages ago as a library book and really enjoyed it. And then book two had come out and I'd never gotten around to reading it. But there's no way I was going to remember what was going on unless I went back to book one. So I got both of them and read both of them.
I've realized that for those things, I just don't care anymore. I'm like, if I don't remember, oh well.
I would have been fine, but it's still kind of, it was actually very enjoyable to reread. I did not remember what happened, so it was great.
So not a lot of search, more just a lot of like releasing holds.
Yeah.
There is like a lot of talking about, like these do get, some of these books do like hit the zeitgeist and people start talking a whole bunch about them, sometimes because they're TV shows, like, you know, so bunch people read Game of Thrones that probably would never have done that except for the TV show. And then right now, one of the big ones is Babel.
Oh, yeah. I started reading that.
Oh. I was going to see if I could purchase a copy of that one, but I just did not get around to getting to a bookstore during this month.
Game of Thrones is kind of an interesting one in some ways because it is fantasy in that there's like dragons. But so much of it is just like medieval politicking stuff. And so like, it's like, if the dragons never actually showed up in the book and we're just like, oh yeah, there's dragons over there. Does that count?
Yes.
It's a particular type of fantasy that got really popular around the time that I was starting to read less of it. And it was totally not up my alley of the type of fantasy I was interested in. So given that I was already less interested in reading fantasy as it was, it just like nosedived my reading in fantasy. I blame that particular era of that style of fantasy being popular for like helping to kill my reading of fantasy.
Okay. Right. So you have a personal vendetta against George R.R. Martin.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit, sir. I do.
I think frequently of this library patron who it was 10 years ago when, like, you know, Game of Thrones was coming out and was very, very popular. And it just started. I think the TV show just started coming out. But like, so the books were like exploding in popularity. And she came into the library, was working, and she had read the last one that was released. And she was like, can I put a hold on the next one? And I was like, oh, well, it's not out yet. And she's like, oh, do you know when it's going to be released? And I was like, I don't think he's done writing it yet. And she's like, well, can you like put my name down to like put me on hold whenever you get it? And I don't remember what I said, but I was like, sure. And might have written her name down somewhere, but like, in my mind, I was like, not going to happen. And, you know, she's still waiting. Oh. Yeah, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad I don't care about those books.
Yeah, I had a coworker at the time who was really into them and was like, do you mind if I spoil something for you? And I was like, I'm not going to read those books unless, you know, maybe when I retire. But it's not going to happen. Go for it.
Yeah, I think I've told this story at some point before on this podcast, but when I was in middle school, I already had the identity of being like the one who read big fantasy books. And then there was this other brown-haired, like, young lady with glasses like me who carried around the biggest fantasy book I'd ever seen. And I was like, oh no, she's stealing my identity. And that was, if I remember correctly, that was the first Wheel of Time book. And then I tried to read it and I hated it. I tried multiple times and I was like, nope, this is terrible. Not for me.
What's next? Are we talking about what we read?
How many total did we manage to read this month?
I read one and a half.
So I read six. I only have three that I'm going to talk about, though.
Okay, six, seven, eight, nine and a half. How many do you read?
Depending on how you count comics, more than one, but I'm just going to talk about one.
So at least 10 between us. Minimum.
If you count Tears of the Kingdom, that's another one.
I feel like this is close to the most we've read in a month collectively then.
Don't look at me. You know the time I read like 17 religious fiction books.
It's so hard to look at people over a webcam, and yet I successfully did it.
That was like a really dramatic gesture, too. I'm sorry you could not see that podcast, folks.
All right. Megan, do you want to go first?
Sure. I read a lot of novellas this month. The first thing I want to talk about is called The Empress of Salt and Fortune by Nikki Vo, which is part of the Singing Hills trilogy. It was first published in 2020, and it's 120 pages. The book opens with a cleric and their parrot. They're in the woods, excitedly visiting a previously forbidden area. They meet an old woman in an abandoned building and start recording the objects and the stories that the former handmaiden of the now dead empress. So recording is the job of the cleric, to record fact and history. That's their job. And this act reveals much about the old empress and the new. So this is tightly written with no excess. And I've got the second book in the series, which is called When Tiger Comes Down the Mountain. The setting riffs off of Imperial China, but the blurb calls it feminist high fantasy, although there's not like a ton of magic there in. They have great covers, though.
I'm looking at it now. Very nice covers. That's actually one of the things that I enjoy about fantasy sometimes. They are more interesting covers most of the time. So I'm just going to talk about my two as one, which I guess I can do now. Okay, so I read Rebecca Roanhorse's first two books in the Sixth World series. I reread Trail of Lightning and then Storm of Locusts. I don't know if there's a third yet. I haven't paid attention. But I just finally, like within a couple months, got the second one and it's been out for a while. So anyways, there are great... So they're kind of in the tradition of urban fantasy. They are a near future. I think it's like 2050 or something like that. Not entirely certain. But there's been a massive apocalypse, the Great Wave. They're set in what would now be Navajo Nation for our current world, in the United States area. But what was the United States is now mostly underwater. And just kind of the area from like mid-Texas to like part of Arizona and then up, you know, up and down from there is out of water and the rest of it is underwater. So there is not much land and not many resources. And there is now a great wall around what had been the Navajo Nation. And within that space, that community has sort of protected itself, built up its own, off of its own traditions, and some of the sort of, call them gods or beings from their mythologies have now started to walk again in the world, as well as some of their traditional monsters, and as well as they are manifesting their clan powers. And, well, not everybody, but some of them are. So our main character is one of those folks.
You said clan. I heard clam. Clam powers.
Oh, clam powers. Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, some of them might have clam powers. They're like the deer clan. So it could be the clam clan. I don't know that they, but... but so like our main character has clan powers that are based around speed and killing. And so she has been taken in by one of the old gods prior to the book's start and been sort of trained up in this way of killing. And then prior to the book's start, they have a falling out. And now she's unmoored and doesn't know what to do with herself. And within that space, she receives a call from help from a nearby community who's been overrun by a monster. And that sends her off in a whole quest to kind of reintegrate herself, basically, by accident, into the community through the needs of others and through understanding better her role within the community and her clan powers and what role they play besides just death. And there's a whole unpacking process going on there. I'm not going to describe all of that because you should read this. It's great. They're really nicely paced, well-plotted, with very interesting characters that are both challenging, but also like relatable, and you can have a lot of compassion to them, but they are very much in the vein, in terms of like structurally and character-wise, in that vein of urban fantasy. If that is not the particular like style of fantasy you like, you may not enjoy these, but they really are like a super well-done version of that type of fantasy set with a very, you know, with like characters where like people who are not Western white people. And so it's really nice. You could potentially see yourself within these characters if you're not a white person, which is really nice to have in urban fantasy or in fantasy, to have those kinds of characters represented there. So, and the story and just like different kinds of traditions of who monsters and gods are. I actually slightly wish that I had gone and tried out the audiobook because I can't pronounce in my head or verbally many of the names of things because they are coming from the Navajo language and I just don't know. So it would have been nice if I had listened to this and maybe gotten the sense of how these are actually pronounced. But I'd have no idea if the quality of the audiobook is really good or not since I didn't listen to it. But I would recommend giving that a try if you're interested, maybe through your library, to see if they have an audiobook and if it's a good quality one, because I think that would add a lot to be able to actually know how these are pronounced, because I wasn't even like sure where to get started on some of them in terms of how to look them up and figure out what the pronunciations actually should be. And my brain was not capable of like fully translating some of them in the sounds and probably anything appropriate to the actual sounds of those words. So yeah, I love these books. They're great fun and good time fillers.
Nice.
So the next one I'm going to mention is called Sing Nightingale by Marie-Hélène Poitras. It's translated from the French by Rhonda Mullins. It's a 2023 publication, and it is only 121 pages. So Marie-Hélène mentions she was inspired by visiting France and the French countryside, and this really does have a feel of like folktale almost, but there is a lot of ambiguity about the level of modernness, I guess. There is some modernness, it feels like mid-20th century about. There is a lot of French poetry and song in it that does get translated, but some of it doesn't. And if you have a bare minimum knowledge of French, it will tell you something about the story. So for example, the manor is called Malmaison, which literally translated means bad house. Bad stuff happens around the house. Surprise! It's described as Gothic, but it felt much more folkloric to me. A little bit kind of like Bluebeardy. Very agrarian and an undercurrent of impending disaster that reveals the rotten core of the family in question. And it also has a gorgeous cover. Like, oh my god.
Now I'll have to look at this cover up, too.
While we're doing that, we can discuss folklore.
Well, that ties into my next book, but we'll get there.
Oh, fascinating. Okay.
So the one I read is A Master of Gin by P. Jelly Clark, who is also known for writing The Black God's Drums. But he's also done a couple of stories that are also set in the same world as this one, such as The Haunting of Tramcar 015, which I really enjoyed. So I've been looking forward to this book. It is set in a version of Cairo in Egypt In the early 20th century. So this is the one that I said was an alternative history in the last episode. And it's a world where magic has come back. Genies have come back and they are being used, and other creatures as well. And they're being used to kind of make Egypt the center of the world because they've become a lot more powerful politically because they have all of this stuff that other countries don't have. And so there's a lot of stuff about how other countries like the United Kingdom are trying to get this stuff and aren't. But really what this is like it's a mystery novel set in this world. The main characters are like detectives who work for some magical ministry thing. And they're trying to solve a murder that seems to be magically done. I love the world that this book is set in. I think it's really fascinating and interesting and cool to see like such a different culture that has also been dramatically changed. So it might be Egypt in the early 20th century, but women have, you know, the right to vote and participate in politics and be seen in public. And so it is very different from historical anywhere in history at that point in time, really. Like, this has dramatically changed society. But I find I didn't find the characters that interesting, unfortunately. And so I was kind of let down a bit by this. I think the world is still really cool. But I think reading about these characters for an entire book was a bit too much for me. But it won a bunch of awards. So I'm clearly the minority for this. So I think if it sounds interesting to you, if you want to read a book set in like early 20th century Egypt, with lots of magic, about a, queer woman detective.
So I'll talk first about the one that I did not finish. It was an audiobook that I listened to close to half of, maybe like 40%, but it was Under the Whispering Door by T.J. Klune. This is like a book and also an author I've just heard a bunch of buzz about and was intrigued by the premise of this one. That it is about a person who has just died, a unpleasant person, you know, in a sort of mundane way, just kind of an asshole who has died, and is in the sort of way station, the holding area between, life and death, and interacting with characters there and, you know, growing emotionally and, it intrigued me on premise. You know, the ferryman is a character, but a sort of non-traditional take on that kind of mythology. And I stuck with it. I really liked the narrator on this audiobook. The person reading was really great. I felt like they had a great tone, which is hard because this is it's a book about death. And also like it is a very sort of lighthearted and at times very like satirical and like overtly funny, jokey book, and I think the reader struck a really good tone for it, and also like the voices that he did were really fantastic. I didn't finish it. I didn't try to finish it. I just couldn't fully commit to it. I felt like it was all just like a little thin for me. Like on paper, this should be a book I love. It's also queer. I should mention that it's got this sort of fantastical premise, but it is about these like sort of ordinary people interacting with these somewhat fantastical things, and is funny and queer and diverse, and just didn't hit me right. I felt a little bit like I was too aware of the writer. I get this with books sometimes, where writing has sort of ruined reading for me in some ways, where I can feel like, okay, you're withholding this information from me, and in a way that's not that graceful, where it's just like he asks a question and characters are like, don't worry about that. And I'm like, I'm worried about that. Give me something. Where it did not felt like did not feel like the mythology was revealing itself at an enjoyable pace. It felt like information was being withheld by the author unnecessarily to string us along. And so I gave up on it.
I started reading one book this month, and I got about, 30, 40, 50 pages in. And I was like, everybody in this book is an unreliable narrator who are not telling me everything that I should know. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going to go up and I'm going to read some spoilers, discover if this book is worth reading. And I read some spoilers and I was like, the twist at the end made me so angry because it was basically an all a dream ending. And I'm just like, why would I even bother reading the book then if it's all made up and pointless, even within the book? Anyway.
I'm ending with my favorite book that I read this month. It's called The Salt Grows Heavy by Cassandra Ka. It's a 2023 publication. And again, this is 112 pages.
A plus. 5 stars.
And this is a dark and twisted mermaid tale, which is what I got the fork for. It's got a dose of body horror, if that makes you squeamish. There are some surgery scenes and such, and also confinement. But it's also kind of a sweet romance, which is weird because it's actually a horror. So I got a whole lot out of that whole 112 pages, and I highly recommend it.
I'm glad to know that you highly recommend that one because by random chance, I stumbled across that one recently, and I was like, that sounds really interesting. Maybe I should read that. And now that I know it's both really short, because I didn't realize that, and really good, it increases the likelihood I'll read that.
Yeah. Definitely, like, foreground the horror part and not the sweet romance-y bit.
The book that I read and finished, actually just finished it today, is titled Lake Lore by Anna Marie McLemore. Pretty cover. I'm holding it up for everyone to see. This is definitely more of the magical realism world of fantasy. All of the sort of fantastical elements are only visible to the two protagonists, and it's told in alternating points of view between this teen named Bastion and this teen named Lore, who met when they, like by chance, when they were kids, and then reunite when they are like 7 years later, when they're in their teens. And they are the only two people who can see this magical world that exists under the lake in their town. And I mean, I really loved it. I feel like I don't want to talk about it too long because we've talked about a lot of books. But in the same way that they're the only two people that can see this magical world, they also, like, very obviously there is like an instant connection from them. Like, they recognize something in each other. They're both non-binary. They're both Mexican-American, and they're both neurodiverse. Bastion has ADHD. Lore is dyslexic. Both of them, like, struggle with the way that their brains work. And it was much more about that than I thought it was going to be. And it, like, as a person who is non-binary and has ADHD, and didn't have, like, access to that self-knowledge as a teen, it hit me, like, I expected it to hit me, like, from the blurb to, like, hit me in the gender feelings. Did not expect it to hit me so hard in the ADHD feelings. But it hit really hard to, like, the point where I was reading it. I was getting a haircut and getting my hair re-dyed earlier this week. And I, like, took the book out and was reading it. And then I was like, I have to stop because I cannot be crying while I'm getting my hair dyed. It can't be happening. Really, really good. Really, really, like, beautifully written. I feel like such a sort of, like, deft touch by the author, and also just, like, some beautiful poetic language beautiful stuff. And, like, for the fantastical elements, like, this world they can both see, it's so colorful. There's the character Bastion, as part of their, like, way they manage their ADHD, they make these I might be mispronounced it, but alabrijes, I think they're called, but these, like, papier-mâché fantasy creatures that have like, you know, it's like a purple armadillo, but with like the wings of a dove and like the tail of something else. When they release them into the lake, they come to life. So it also just like is a fun, weird fantasy world to spend a little time in with them. But yeah, very, very moving, like very lovely lake lore by Anna Marie McLemore about seeing and being seen.
So I guess we should talk about appeal factors.
Magic.
World building. Like the things we started off with at the beginning as like the low hanging fruit of definitional pieces are often appeal factors there, but like not the end all and be all of the appeal factors.
Mm-hmm. There's possibility.
I think this is one of the tricky things about like having a genre that is so broad like this that actually includes lots and lots of sub genres within it is we've covered horror fantasy, we covered magical realism fantasy, we covered urban fantasy,
alternative history,
like just in the readings that we've done, we've covered a lot of bits. And like, I mean, I know I said explicitly, if you like this particular tropes that fall within that realm of urban fantasy, what I read is a good example of it. But if you are the kind of person that likes, that loved the you know, the Wheel of Time series or the Game of Thrones series, then like that is not the same thing. And it's not the same, like you're not going to necessarily translate over and be a reader who appreciates both of those. You might be, but it's not a guarantee. So there are a lot of factors to consider there about, you know, how much world building, how much magic does somebody prefer to have? How much character driven does it need to be? How dark can it be?
How much royalty is there?
How much royalty?
I want is there? None.
I feel the same way about like if a war gets mentioned in the blurb of a fantasy book, like my interest just tanks.
Yes.
I'm honestly, I guess I'm fine with royalty being in it as long as it's like these people are bad and parasites. But I find so much royalty, so much fantasy fiction just has royalty as like de facto and good. And it generally frustrates me to no end. As unavoidable, maybe even, is the way to phrase it.
Mm-hmm.
De facto and unavoidable. And I'm just like, no. Give me anarchist space witches. That's the magic. That's the fantasy novel I want.
I had a classmate who at one point in library school who was saying that they don't like to read, they don't read fantasy or science fiction. And they're like, because that stuff can't happen. So it's not that interesting to me. They're like, that stuff can't happen. I was like, yeah, that rules.
Yeah, totally.
That like it's a thing that couldn't happen, and but we're capable of like thinking of it and imagining of it and feeling invested of it. That's awesome. Like that's what's cool about stories.
Definitely.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I often think a lot when I'm thinking about like fantasy as like decision making, like when I'm deciding about what I want to read. How so like that world building versus plot driven can be a big thing. Some people can do both really well. Some people are like, I'm all world building all the time. What's a plot? And some people are like, all plot all the time. There's got to be cohesion in my world. What are you talking about? Right. So like,
or some people really want the characters to be well developed, you know, yeah. And they're like, this is what matters to me. And these characters could be in any setting and I would want to read it. Yeah. And other people are like, the characters could be, you know, pieces of paper with
as long
the word,
as there's dragons.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So like some of those can be just like the low hanging fruit of thinking about appeal, but then it gets a lot more complicated from there. And then, like even with the characters thing, like, and it's important, I think, in some of the stuff that we read is like, how much can you see yourself in these? And fantasy has a long tradition of being like very white and very male. And so, and male in a like misogynistic kind of awful way. So like, it can really be an important factor in decision making now, because now you have a lot of options that are not very white in very aggressively white ways and not very male in very aggressively male ways. And it's like, wonderful. There are options.
It's great.
You know, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because like that is the reason we started doing our book lists of books mm-hmm. in different genres by Black, Indigenous, and people of color authors, is because we were in a library and we discovered that they'd very nicely printed book lists in different genres, and they were all white people. And we're just like, what are you doing? There's like every genre you can find like non-white people to write in that genre, unless it's Amish romance. But every other genre you can find those books. And it's like, it's not even that much of an effort to do it. And the fact that we've put out dozens and dozens of these lists for so many different genres really proves it, that every genre has this.
Maybe you should let Jam say whether or not it's a lot of effort.
I was going to say, it depends on like which genre, how much effort it is, but certainly it's work worth doing, and we've made it really easy for folks.
Sorry, what I was saying is it's not that much effort to put some on your list. You know, if you're putting together a list of fantasy or science fiction authors or whatever it happens to be, finding a few like Black, Indigenous, people of color authors to put on that list is not difficult.
I feel the same way about like book displays.
Yes.
If you make a book display and it has all white authors, what are you doing? Like, there's no reason any book display should be all white authors.
I just want to mention one more appeal factor that people have spoken to me about is, and it's not in the ones I read, but in the ones people read, that is the big, thick, fat fantasy book, is that you get to spend a lot of time there. Like, the appeal is to spend a lot of time over the weeks and the months that you're reading it within that world that is so immersive and so engaging. And so that is an appeal to some people.
And some people would rather play Zelda than read that book.
But it serves a similar purpose.
Well, yeah, they're spending a lot of time in a world and exploring it and discovering all the different aspects of it. So,
yeah. That's also why, like, I have a coworker who I've already chatted with about reading habits, who's said, like, I read series. That's what I want. I want to know that there's a series so I can spend time in that world, so that I can be with those characters and see progression and growth and change and world building and all those kinds of things happen. I read series. So, like, that's another thing. I think that's also very common in fantasy is a lot of series as opposed to one-offs. And so it's a lot easier for those kinds of readers who want to stay engaged with a world for a long period of time to have many different options to pick from that offer that experience. Do you have anything else we want to add about appeal? We're like, I like it. It's great.
I guess the other thing we didn't even mention is things like Dungeons and Dragons as a fiction storytelling thing. Like, those are books that are basically all world building and lore. And then you get to put your own characters into them by playing those games. So,
I mean, there's role playing games for every genre, but fantasy is the most popular.
At least in, you know, English speaking North America.
Yes. We will not talk about Nordic LARPing culture.
It's so weird.
Well, we've got to put an article about Nordic LARPing culture in the show notes now.
There's just a book we can recommend about that.
Mm-hmm.
I've read it, maybe for the podcast.
Do people know about Nordic LARPing culture? We'll talk about it off mic.
I remember this now. Okay.
Look, all I remember was a guy getting peed on because he was sleeping outside LARPing as a homeless person. And I'm like, what? Why would you want to do this?
They're very reality-based or like high concept. It's a lot. it's a different culture.
The other one was the LARP where people just went out in boats and fished and LARPed as fisher people. And I'm just like, that's just a job.
You're just going fishing.
You're just going fishing. Anyway.
Every time I went camping, I was just LARPing as a camper.
Yeah,
exactly.
Camper the whole
exactly.
time.
I didn't even know it.
Sometimes in life, you gotta LARP.
I mean, in some ways, like, I LARP every time I go to work.
Oh, yeah.
It's my work sona.
I was thinking about this the other day it was a while ago now, but I remember, like, I was having a tough time, and there was, like, just, like, a series of days where every day I would get up and be like, okay, it's my first day at wizard school. I have to get dressed. I can't be late to my first day of wizard school.
That's great. Yeah, I do feel a little bit like in my new job, I have been working on my character stats for my Wixona. Like, that's a good description of how I feel about what I've been doing recently.
Jam, I think you came up with another good concept there where for a book, which is just my first day at wizard school, where it's just like a time loop as well. And so you just have to keep doing.
It's always my first day at wizard school.
It's always your first day at wizard school.
This sounds like one of those manga with a long title.
It's been my first day at wizard school for 5,000 years, and so now I'm better than all the professors. Mm-hmm.
Do we even have to ask the last question?
Are we going to read this again? Yes.
All right. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Book Club for Masochists. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you like the show, subscribe so you never miss an episode, and consider giving us a positive rating or a review. If you've already done that, thank you.
For all our URLs and social media accounts, the 4 in our name is a numeral. You can go to our website at bookclub4m.com, join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/bookclub4m, and find us on Instagram at bookclub4m. Our email address is bookclub4m@gmail.com.
On our website, you can find show notes that will provide links to things we mentioned, social media info for everyone who appeared on this episode, and our genre-based book list of titles by authors of color.
You can suggest a genre or title for us to read, or request a book recommendation from us. We have a form you can fill out on our website, bookclub4m.com. No promises on reading your specific suggestion, but we will give you a recommendation if you ask for one.
All opinions are our own and do not reflect our places of employment, if they exist.
Our theme music is To Arrakis by Dark Sun from the Free Music Archive.
New episodes are the first and third Tuesday of every month.
Join us again on Tuesday, June 20th, when we'll be talking about different kind of book club, celebrity book clubs, book reading campaigns, promotional sorts of book clubs.
Then on Tuesday, July 4th, we'll be discussing nonfiction books about UFOs and aliens.
Oh, perfect for Independence Day.
Oh, wow. Didn't even catch that.
That's what American Independence Day is all about, right?
Absolutely.
Perfect.
As an American can confirm.
Yep. Our founding fathers, Will Smith and Randy Quaid.
Oh,
and Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum. You can't forget Jeff Goldblum.
And what's his name? Bill Pullman?
Bill Pullman, yeah.
If only it was nonfiction, I would try to find like the novelization of that movie and read it.
Welcome to Earth. We're being too funny. We need to start recording. What's happening?
There is a spider heading down from the ceiling straight towards my head, and Matthew saved me.
Ah! Wow.
That's not as cute as when we have cats interrupting.
Yeah, you need to get a cat so that you can start blaming things on it.
Yes, the magical spider of podcast interrupting has been banished.
It's been captured by its invisible thread there. Okay.
Goodbye.